This session was recorded at Journey Underground, a recovery ministry of Journey Christian Church in Fairbanks, Alaska.
All right. Back in January, we did a healthy identity recovery counseling training. How you guys like that for a title? That was cool. So tonight's session was part of that. If it looks familiar to you, if you weren't here, then you know you'll get this tonight. And after that, we entered into our biblical self-awareness, and it's really the core of what our ministry is built on, is our identity. And so we're at the place now where we hit this phase of tonight's session. We started off with who we are as a body, soul, and spirit, and then we went into two different sessions about our emotions. And so tonight we're going to talk about how problems develop. And so that's kind of where we're going to be. All right. So as you know, with this body I have here, this skinny little body, my earth suit, it carries with it some needs, right? I need to breathe so many times. I need to eat so much food. I need shelter, that kind of stuff. But I'm more than a body. God has designed it in such a way, a marvelous way. He actually put a person inside this body. Incredible. And that person needs some things as well. You know, I was thinking about this. If you were to take a little baby or a little toddler, and there was some alien being, and you had to tell this alien what this child needed to live, you know, what would you say? Right? You'd say, he only needs food. He needs to breathe. You know, don't cover his mouth. That's where he gets his air. Right, he needs water. You know, you just start listing off some stuff. And is that all he needs? And when you start dealing with the person he is inside, that's a whole different story. Because clearly, as we know, he needs love. Right? Now we're talking about personal needs, the need we have inside. He doesn't only just need love, he needs acceptance. And it's a beautiful thing when I see my grandson, he just walks up to me like he's ordering a soda and says, Pap, could you hold me? You know, plain and simple, you know? And what is he saying? You know, will you accept me? And he just needs that embrace. And when I give him that embrace, there he is. Just, I'm getting my need for acceptance met by Pap, you know, pretty cool. And I love that. And then he'll turn around and say, you know, Pap, watch me. And he'll stack the cushions up a certain way. And he's going to do some fancy jump. And the whole time he's doing it, he's looking to see if I'm looking. Why? Because he needs to know something else. He needs to know he's important. That what he does matters. Now, these are all these personal needs. I talk about it all the time here. And we need love. We need acceptance. We need forgiveness. You know, what would it be like if you spilled milk and you were never forgiven? Can't be forgiven for mistakes. Unforgivable. We need forgiveness. We need to be able to operate in forgiveness. So we need love, acceptance, forgiveness. If you have love, acceptance, and forgiveness, according to my training, you have met your need for security. With love, acceptance, forgiveness. If I have that, I'm secure as a person in here. But then my other need of being significant, that is being important, knowing I have meaning and purpose, that my life matters for something, and that I'm able to do what I've been designed to do. If I have those things, I know I'm significant. So I need both columns. I need that inner love, acceptance, forgiveness, and I need that outer importance, meaning, purpose, adequacy. I'm equipped. I can do it. And those needs are so important. If you were to take all those words I just spouted off and collected them out of the air, scrunched them all together into a big ball, and then made one word out of those words, who knows what I'm going to write?
Worth.
My need for worth. If I have a sense of personal worth, I can actually arrive at this inner contentment, this rest, rest for my soul I so desperately need. This is actually called the Solomon Syndrome, what I'm going to do here. And let me just map it out really quick for you. I don't want us to go into our heads. I want us to stay in our hearts here. But what we have here with the Solomon Syndrome is we start right off. I'm going to write deficit motivation. The sense that something's missing. And this is like an awareness of, Michael Dye says, the awareness of the empty place. That empty place was designed for a powerful supernatural relationship with God, a spiritual relationship with God, and a relationship with other people, like a powerful connection. But what happens is when we're wounded by those in authority over us and our upbringing and experiences we have in school, our brains make a decision that that's not where we're going to get those needs met from. And it says relationships bad. And so that empty place can get really confusing. But I still have it. I need connection. So I learn how to connect in an unrelational way, in a way that I can control, in a way that is safe for me or familiar to me and my family. But we'll have a deficit motivation, the awareness that maybe something's missing, right? And we go right from there, and we will reach a false assumption. And I'm just going to write a sump, right, to be lazy. All right, this false assumption is basically what I've come to conclude will do it for me. What's going to give me love, acceptance, forgiveness? What's going to give me that sense of significance? And that false assumption can be many, many different things. Once I reach this conclusion of what it's going to take, that leads me to self-centered behavior. All right, let's just say that I come to the false assumption that I need to come up with a cure for cancer, and that'll give me a sense of worth. I mean, it seems like it would, right? I mean, would I be important? Would I be adequate? Would I be loved, accepted? I would probably be forgiven if I came up, you know, with a cure for cancer. But it would be self-centered in its motivation because it's about me. I need worth, and here's how I'm going to get it. And I could take, you know, being elected into some kind of political position, give me a sense of worth. That would make me important. That would make me have a meaning and purpose, adequacy, love, acceptance, all those things. Money will do it. So self-centered behavior leads me to what we're going to write is a false goal. And it's false because of what it's based on, that it's going to meet that need. Okay, so after I reach my false goal, it only leads me to temporary satisfaction. Right? Temporary satisfaction followed by emptiness. This is called the Solomon Syndrome, and around it goes. And as you know, Solomon was a very powerful king, very wealthy king. And because he had a huge amount of money, a huge amount of power, whatever he decided he thought he needed to be okay, he could get it. He could go around and around, which makes him such a good example. In fact, we have his own testimony in the book of Ecclesiastes of his journey for personal worth, because he was a person just like we are with those needs. Now, he tried education. He thought, I know, if I just get real smart, just attain a lot of knowledge, then that'll do it. And he was able to do it. He did it. That was his false assumption, and it led him to self-centered behavior, and he was chasing down a false goal, and he was able to reach it, giving him temporary satisfaction, followed by emptiness. In his own words, vanity of vanities, right? Emptiness, emptiness. It's like chasing the wind. Led him to nothing. He tried partying. You ever see those images of Las Vegas where they're on the roof and everybody's dancing and they're, you know, that kind of thing? He was a party animal. That was his false assumption. If I could just party all the time, then I will have worth. And that led him all the way around back to emptiness. He tried work. If I could just accomplish a bunch of things, build a bunch of buildings, right? If I could have a bunch of buildings with a plaque with my name on it, then you know, that'll do it, right? And he went around this Solomon syndrome. He tried alcohol, money. Money's tricky because if I can just acquire a bunch of wealth, would that give me love? Seems like it. How about acceptance? I'd be on every board. I'd be invited to join every club. Would I be forgiven? Oh, all's forgiven. If I'm wealthy, how about significance? That'd be super important. I could solve all my problems by throwing money at it. And he went around this and he said, emptiness, emptiness. It's all empty. Like, it's all empty. If you read through it, it's painful to read it. And Solomon tried sexual behavior. And from my studies, he didn't hold back. And so his false assumption, if I could just have all kind of crazy sex, that would give me worth. That'll do it. That led him to self-centered behavior, chasing down this false goal, giving him temporary satisfaction, followed by an emptiness. This was a little different because it says that Solomon actually became clinically depressed. Says that he hated life. He became suicidal. He hated life going around this Solomon syndrome. Now, I tell you that our nation has been trapped in the Solomon syndrome for a long time. It's called the American dream. To have it all, to be it all, to get a sense of worth as a person. We are 5% of the world's population, and according to statistics I've been studying, we use, check it out, we are 5% of the world's population, and we use 99.9% of the world's heroin and opiates. We are severely depressed. You think we need to be a little more comfortable? Maybe that'll do it. Have a little more money. I was really, really fascinated when Derek, back at the theater, asked everyone how much money it would make them happy if they could write down a figure for the next year, and everyone wrote down more than they're making now. Like, no one wrote less, or I just stayed the same. Like, everyone wanted a little more, you know? We all have beliefs about this worth, about what it's going to take to give us a sense of security and significance. Another word for this is what's going to make us okay inside. What do you assume? What do you assume that it's going to take to make you okay? To give you a sense of contentment where you can actually, I'm okay. We all have a core truth. See, I was raised during the 70s, and my parents were hippies in a sense. My dad was an entertainer, and we had a drug house going where the pot smoke in the house filled the room, all these rock and rollers, Led Zeppelin playing, joints being passed, and the culture of our family was kind of one of us sitting at my dad's feet, hearing his stories that started off with, man, I was so messed up the other night. Man, I was way gone. You know, everyone would listen to his stories of how messed up he was and the crazy antics that would follow. The cops were always around. And there was always all these stories about being messed up and being so high. And everyone would be laughing, passing weed around. And it was just all about, centered around, you know, this thing of drugs, being high, being messed up, having stories, having wild sex. I mean, the culture of my family, the way we operated as a family, what was familiar to me was my core truth was I will have worth if I'm having sex and I'm all messed up on drugs. I mean, that was my core truth. I believed it, not here. I believed it. I lived out my core truth, and we all have a core truth that we believe. and it plays out in our lives, plain and simple. And a lot of times it goes undetected, unchallenged, because it's a deep subconscious belief. A little commercial, next week we're going to talk about subconscious training and reprogramming and renewing our minds. But that was my core truth, and I lived it, and it destroyed my life. It destroyed others. What followed was death. Now, the writer of most of the New Testament, Apostle Paul, he was pretty much the opposite of me. He was trained, religiously trained, highly trained in religion, in the law. He was a powerful guy religiously. I mean, he walked it. He was an incredible figure. His mentor and teachers were famous people. He was legendary in his ability to be self-disciplined and uphold religious law. Very different than my upbringing. If he walked in here right now the way he was, the religious spirits would walk in with him, and it would be powerful to see a group of Pharisees walking in. It's a powerful thing. When religion walks in, it can be very intimidating to people. And what he had to say was so crazy and so cool. He said the very credential that these people are waving around as something special, I'm tearing up and throwing out with the trash, along with everything else I used to take credit for. And why? Because of Christ. All things I once thought were so important are gone from my life compared to the high privilege of knowing Christ Jesus as my master. Firsthand, everything I once thought I had going for me is insignificant dog dung, he says. I've dumped it in the trash so that I could embrace Christ and be embraced by him. I didn't want some petty, inferior brand of righteousness that comes from keeping a list of rules when I could get the robust kind that comes from trusting Christ, God's righteousness, which is a gift. In other words, he says, I count everything as loss because of the worth, the surpassing worth of knowing Christ. Everything else is loss. Everything else is loss. It's all trash. I don't know about you, but I know that we pursue what we value. We pursue what we value. And I know this for me, it was very painful to come to the conclusion that I did not have a way to live. I didn't know how to live. And to be in a place where, you know, I'm a middle-aged man, homeless, completely wrecked, arrested again, on probation again, another lost relationship, another letdown for a bunch of people that believed in me, and to realize I don't know how to live life. I have no idea. I don't know how it's done. And I know that my core truth, what was going to make me okay this weekend, this week, this month, this year, was not working for me. What was handed to me from my father had to go out in the trash. Garbage. Garbage. Wasn't going to work. What we value, we pursue. It's why we see athletes juicing up, getting caught. What do they value? Where's their worth? Willing to cheat, do anything they can. It's why we see Hollywood movie stars getting their face operated on and tightened until their ears touch back here behind their head. Business people stepping on each other to get ahead. In John 12, it says that there was actually a group of people that believed in Jesus but wouldn't say it publicly because they preferred the praise of men rather than the praise that comes from God. Like, wow, that's brutal. Some places say glory. I love that. Glory has to do with weight. You know, what you give weight to. The weight that comes from God or the weight that comes from men and the things of this world. You know, I think most of us here are familiar with the 12 steps. And I've heard people say that spirituality is a part of the 12 steps. It's not. It is the program. Spirituality is the 12 steps. It's what it is. It's a spiritual program. It's a spiritual process. It's all about the awakening. It's about the awakening. Boom, like fireworks. That's why alcohol is only mentioned once in the 12 steps at the very beginning, because it's really not the issue at all. Peter chapter 2 says, hear this about yourself. Natalie, hear this about you. You're a royal priest, part of a holy nation, God's very own possession. As a result, you can show others the goodness of God, for he called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you had no identity as a person, now you're God's. Once you received no mercy, but now you've received God's mercy. We take this identity thing super serious in our recovery. We are made in the image of God. This is the real turning point here, guys, when you see image of God. An image is like representing the thing itself. And if I go up and I disrespect the image, I'm disrespecting it, right? If I worship the image, I'm worshiping it. And the same thing with people. We're made in the image of God. It's the idea of, if you imagine a king, and he has a huge kingdom, and all around the neighborhoods, in the stores and marketplaces and corners, he erected an image of himself where he wasn't physically present, something would represent him so the people could be comforted, know who he is, know about his shining face and love. We are his image, put all around the neighborhood, standing representing him, so people will see the kindness of God, see his face, his love, and know how he feels about people. Some of us have had some vandalism in our image, taken some serious hits, and God is actively involved in restoring his image in you and in me. And he's gone to great lengths to do it. Ephesians 2:10, just like Pastor Derek said this morning, that you are and we are his masterpiece, his poem. What would it be like for you to actually believe that you are God's offspring? What would that be like? I told this story before about working for Fred Meyer. It was a cool company to work for, right? And I had a relationship with that company, grocery store. And I would go in, I would be dressed in my uniform, punch in, work my hours, take my breaks, everything. Like, it was a very legal relationship with the company. I had a relationship with them, but it was very legal, right? Just like that. And I would do my part, and they did their part, cut me a check. But how crazy would it be if I married into the family and became a Fred Meyer? Now I'm family. Now it's my store. Now it's my chain. And I walk into a store now. Do I have a uniform on? Maybe. Do I punch in? Nope. I'm always on the clock. Why? It's my store. How about the trucks coming to the back room? What do I think about the merchandise? That's my family's merchandise. That's their loss and profits. That's my case of Fruit Loops. What about my breaks? Well, I could take a break all day if I want to. Probably end up working through my breaks because it's a whole different game. It's my store. It's my family store. It's my kids' store, my grandkids' store. It's a very different game. Now I have a relationship with Fred Meyer that's radically different. And see, this is what I'm talking about when the Bible talks about who you are as the offspring of God, that you will inherit what is God's. What does that do for this word worth? Are you secure? Are you important? I mean, it's almost mind-blowing. And if you just let it sit up here in your mind, it won't do you as much good. It's God to get down here, and we do a lot of work on what it means. When I shower, Son of God showering, oh, Father God, save this world. What do you want me to do today? Let me walk as you want. Put me where you want. Let me hear your voice. The world needs you as me. The world needs you, God, today as me. Help me do that. Let me show up as you, as me. The Bible pictures, guys, a spiritual realm. Get this. The Bible pictures a spiritual realm that is so enormous. Enormous in detail. Authorities, rulers, dominions, powers. It's vast. Armies. It's humongous. And the first thing he does when he comes to know you is he establishes you as a member of his family in that world. Boom. Done. That's powerful. And he says, I want you to live from that realm here. And I want you to love people. Tell them all about it. It's the big world, guys. It's the real world. And you are seated with Christ in heavenly places. That's power. So every day, I have a decision to make. And it's, if I get this position, if I get this to go my way, if I have that, if I attain this, if I feel that, then I'll be okay. Then I'll have worth. Or I can operate out of this. You guys can still see this. Because of the work of the cross, God will accomplish through me what he's given me to do. And my worth is no longer on the table. It's not up for grabs. Because you didn't give it to me. You can't take it. And what does that love look like in the most extreme? It looks like a man hanging on the cross, naked, rejected by the whole town, still loving people because he's okay. He knows who he is. I'm a son of God. I love you. I love you, and I'm sorry you're killing me and you're hurting others. That's the length it goes to. That's what he wants us to look like. People that can love others at that kind of cost. That's power, guys. That's power. That's power. God didn't save Stan Bourne so Stan Bourne wouldn't shoot up anymore, which is what I thought. I thought if I just quit doing drugs, then there, he would be happy. No, he saved Stan Bourne to make me a son. And what did he save you for? So this week, if you could just challenge yourself, when we did this in our identity training, we said just ask God for three things this week. I'll have worth if. And ask him to show you. Like walk through your day. You won't believe. It'll come down to categories of your looks, what you have, your performance. You'll see it raise its ugly head and challenge it with the gospel. I already have worth because of who I am. Who am I? I'm God's son. What does that mean? I can love you. It's not about me. It can actually be about you. So this is the gospel that set my wife and I free to take runs to the dump, throw some stuff away, and begin walking in power for the first time. You know what it's like to have Christmas gifts to offer on Christmas? You know, that when you show up at someone's house, it's a family member, they're not running from you, hiding. That when you get pulled over, you're not throwing stuff out the window or swallowing stuff. And, you know what I mean? That when I go to the bathroom, no one cares what's in it. You know, no one's UA-ing me. No one even cares, you know. I go to the bathroom all day. No one even cares. It doesn't even matter. That's very different. God will set us free to love others. Next week, we're going to really hardcore go after the conscious and subconscious. A guy wrote a book. He was an Olympic athlete called The Ant and the Elephant. And the ant was actually the conscious mind, and the elephant was the subconscious. You don't get that elephant. The ant can be up there making all kind of noise. Doesn't really matter. And it's just powerful stuff to know how to go after that. How we really change is going to be down in what the Bible calls the heart. Thank you, guys.